Welcome to the Baby Weight Podcast, brought to you by Omaha Better Birth Project. Omaha Better Birth Project is a nonprofit organization. Our mission is to decrease inequities in childbirth by providing access to doula services, childbirth education, and prenatal and postpartum support for low-income and teen families. Find out more about Omaha Better Birth Project online at www.omahabetterbirth.org. Sam and Emily here again for the Baby Weight Podcast. Today we are joined yet again by our friend Mary Claire, and she is going to share her second empowered birth experience.
Hello, Mary Claire. Welcome back. We're so glad to have you on the podcast to share your second birth story with us today. The last time you were on, we spoke about your oldest child and about the experience you had with her. Would you like to kind of walk us through what your pregnancy was like for your second pregnancy is what you're going to share with us today? Is that correct?
Yes. Thank you so much for inviting me to share this second birth. So just to preface, before this second birth, I had gone full birth nerd.
A lot of us do that.
Right. I had been dreaming about my next birth for like a decade, no lie. Mm-hmm. And I just had such a tremendous experience with my first birth that when I was ready to, you know, get pregnant for my second kiddo, I was just like full-fledged into it, you know, like all the things. Mm-hmm. And the internet had changed so much by this time. So
much information.
You may remember my first pregnancy was very much a surprise and a gift. And so I thought that this one would just come like lickety-split. But I had had an IUD, the Mirena IUD, for 10 years. So 5 years, took it out, 5 years, took it out. Mm-hmm. And during that whole time, I never had a cycle. I never had a period. So we took the IUD out, and I remember Jenda, my midwife, she was like, you are fertile now, so if you ovulate tomorrow, like, you'll get pregnant tomorrow. So right. I was literally like went home, and I was like looking at my husband like, just look at me. We're going to make this baby. And about a year later, I still didn't get pregnant. It took me about 9 months to even get a cycle back.
Wow.
And yeah, it took a really long time. If you remember from the last pod, like, very natural, yogi, birth nerd. So I was taking Vitex. I was eating maca. I was meditating. I had all the crystals. I was, you know, like, changed my whole yoga practice, all of my manifestations. And one of my best friends from growing up is actually an infertility doctor.
Okay.
And one day she literally sat me down and was like, why don't you let me help you? And I was like, I just felt like I was almost giving in, because part of my identity was so natural, holistic. I can be, you know. But she saw me suffering, and she saw me sad, and I went into her office, and, you know, she did an ultrasound, and we ran some blood tests, and she was like, things are really promising, you know, like, your levels look good, but you're not ovulating, and that's why all of this is happening. So we can use this process called IUI to start. We'll do a medicated IUI, so I took shots. It just felt like someone took a huge weight off my shoulders, because it wasn't just me thinking my body was failing anymore. I was letting everyone down, you know, because when you want to get pregnant, everyone else wants you to get pregnant. And so that's all anyone wants to talk to you about. And it's like, just relax. It'll happen. Have fun trying. And I'm like, have fun trying. You know what sex I'm having right now?
It's no longer fine.
Right, exactly. And, you know, just, it was just stressful. We ended up doing two rounds of IUI. The first round, I had a chemical pregnancy. And then the second round it took. And I actually have the greatest photograph from the second IUI actual event, like when I was inseminated. And y'all, I have like this like embroidered scarf on, and I have like all these crystals on me. I like took a selfie, and my best friend is doing it, and she's like laughing hysterically at me and just like falling in love with this moment. She's like, this is definitely the first time that there have been crystals all around the IUI procedure. But I just felt, and looking back at that photo, I was just so in love and in joy. You know, it just felt like right. And sure enough, I was pregnant, and I actually took a pregnancy test early. Like, you're not supposed to take one for like 10 or 14 days or something. And I took it early, and there was like the lightest line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like held it. I didn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
I told my husband right away. I just had to like hold it as my own for a moment, you know?
Yeah.
And then that night he came home. I was like, let's take a pregnancy test just for fun. Let's just do that. So we did. And I'm like, look at that. Oh, my God. Sorry now. But, and, you know, it was just, we were so excited. It was so fun. And I am, believe it or not, the emotional one of our marriage. And so he was like very like pragmatic and, you know, very excited, of course. But I had my midwife was the same midwife, Jenda. She was amazing. I didn't go see her until like probably 14 or 15 weeks because I was still seeing my infertility doctor.
Okay.
So you still, after the IUI, you still go in and have these like ultrasounds, and, you know, a fertility doctor's ultrasound machine is like Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
Like an ovary from outer space.
Yeah.
And she was running blood work and all this stuff. And so I finally, you know, went to my midwife, and we just got so excited. It was just another really lovely connected moment. And by that time, my morning sickness was in full effect. It was, again, like very just like nauseous all the time. Tons of food aversions. Peppermint is always off limits for me. Like, I have to change my toothpaste.
Really? Because that's what they like recommend to.
Very annoying for me, because it's like I would take peppermint, or, you know, peppermint flavored medicine for indigestion, or chew gum, or, you know, but it's like I have an aversion to peppermint.
Oh, so wow. Weird.
I know. So it lasted a little bit longer in Marigold's pregnancy. I want to say like 20 weeks or so. Besides that, very, very normal, healthy pregnancy. She was in the breech position until probably like 33 or 34 weeks.
Wow, pretty late in the game there.
Pretty late in the game. And I'm even more of a birth nerd now, but at that time I was kind of like, okay, what will I need to do to deliver this baby vaginally no matter what, you know? I even more now stand with the knowing that breech is just a variation of normal.
Yeah.
And, you know, our brilliant OBs just haven't been trained in how to deliver these kiddos for, you know, a couple decades. So, and unfortunately in Nebraska, you know, midwives can't. So that kind of got on my radar at that time. And I started doing a lot of research and connecting with, you know, breech groups on Facebook and Breech Without Borders. And eventually she flipped, and, you know, I was certainly relieved, but more from the perspective of just like, I didn't want to have to change birth care providers.
Yeah, definitely.
Find an OB that would maybe let me deliver, you know?
And your first pregnancy, you said that your Aunt Sarah was your doula. Was she your doula again this time?
She was.
Oh, awesome.
She was. And it was just awesome because it was almost like we were both so excited for the labor and delivery, because we kind of had just this great template to go off of. But it was also really cool because my husband, Alex, it was his, you know, first pregnancy, right? And so to have her there really kind of maintained that feeling for us that this was, like, you know, very special, even though Alex has been my first daughter's dad for many, many years. So that's not really part of it, but just to let that, like, special energy and sacred energy of a pregnancy be shared by my husband at that time was really, really awesome.
How did she incorporate your partner in the birth experience?
Well, I think kind of like unspoken, she would ask a lot of questions that she probably knew the answer to, or like I knew the answer to.
Yeah.
But wanted to keep that co-creative space, you know, and I think as doulas, and you know this, like there's this perception that we're going to like stand in place for the partner or like take, right? And in all actuality, it is like the best thing for the partner because the partner gets to like be part of the show too and doesn't have, you know. And so I think that was understood by Alex. Like he knew that having a doula, having my Aunt Sarah there was going to be a great thing and very supportive and wonderful. But also it just helped him learn about the process, you know, and she, my Aunt Sarah, would take time to explain the stages of birth and, you know, dilation and things, like I said, that, you know, we probably kind of knew, but was very, very foreign language for him.
Right. Yeah. Brand new for him. Did you write a birth plan for this one? Like you did in your first birth?
I really didn't. I just kind of like wrote in the notes on my phone, like unmedicated, avoid all interventions, you know, no vitamin K, no Hep B, no erythromycin, which we can kind of touch on in a little bit. I'm not like, you know, huge on the one side of the fence or the other, except that I just delay everything. And I did with both girls. Both my kiddos. So anyhow, I didn't really have a birth plan. I was just really excited to give birth. There was a part of me that was like, what if my body doesn't remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, or like, what if I can't do it this time or something?
Yeah.
So
little thoughts kind of worm their way in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They do. They really do. And I just remember feeling so, it was almost like with my first pregnancy, not inadequacies, but I was poor as a church mouse. I was kind of on my own. I was in this kind of unstable relationship. And all of those things really made me rely fully on myself.
Yeah.
You know? And now, and with my second pregnancy, my partner is like the most loving, supportive human on the planet. And I had this, you know, 11-year-old kiddo who's just like an angel on earth, and my Aunt Sarah, and we're comfortable, and I like have food on the table and a roof, you know. It's like all of those things also kind of made me go like, well, what if life is too good?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Do you ever have those feelings?
Like, absolutely.
Everything's going too well. Something's going to, you know.
Something's
going
to go wrong.
Yes. That's Omaha Better Birth in a nutshell so far. I'm so well so far that we're like, okay, where's this other shoe? And when's it coming? But yes, I understand.
Do you think, I mean, it sounds like from an outsider, you had such a great experience with your provider and your doula, your whole team you had working with you, that you really didn't feel the need for a birth plan the second time around. You already knew that your desires and your birth were going to be met. I think we do see a lot of families who did not have a great first experience or second or whatever experience. And so the next time around, they really dig into that birth plan. They really dig into every option that they have, and they grill their providers about it. And it just goes to show how having a supportive team around you that really understands and accepts the things that you want makes a huge difference, even in your future births.
Yeah.
Yes. You just nailed that. Like that, you need to make that a clip and have that on the website when they open the website up.
Perfect.
Yeah, exactly. So
were you still dancing at this time? And
oh, yeah,
you still had your yoga practice, I'm assuming, but were you still dancing and traveling during this pregnancy or were you home?
I was traveling, yes, but teaching yoga and cycle, indoor cycle, like spinning.
Oh my goodness, spinning.
So, it's just definitely a part of who I am, just regarding like movement and like filling my schedule and traveling and kind of my mind always thinks I can do more. And then at some point my body's like, hello.
Mm-hmm.
I was traveling a lot. This was 2019, and her birth happened on July 30th. So I was pregnant during the summer months, which actually, believe it or not, it was hot, and I don't want to say miserable, but it was definitely sweaty in places that I just like did not want to be that sweaty in. But
right.
The difference between a winter birth and a summer birth is in the winter, you have to put in snow boots. And in
yes.
the winter, you need like a huge freaking coat.
We've had this conversation. I wore flip flops in both my winter pregnancies. Yeah.
I preferred that sort of like, oh, I can just put on a sundress and flip flops and like call mm-hmm. it good. You know, that was nice. Same thing happened. Went through the weekend very, very miserable, like past my due date, you know, maybe like 3 or 4 days, not as much as my first. And again, Monday, Tuesday rolled around and I just felt a sense of clarity, you know, and that kind of like, the fog has cleared and whatever will be, and I'm 36 at this time, so I am a geriatric.
Which is insane.
Don't say
that
word.
Is insane when it comes
the first couple months, I was like, what, huh? And then I was like, I'm just going to own this. I'm going to wear shirts, you know?
Yeah.
I do also bring that up because they were much more quick to schedule an induction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did not want that. So I had Genda sweep my membranes on Friday, which would have been like 2 or 3 days after my due date. And it was like a tickle. It was kind of like, oh, okay. And she was like, yeah, you're still at 2. You know, we'll see what happens through the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Tuesday, my friend who's my fertility doctor, I don't even know if this is like legal. She's my doctor, so it's fine. I'm like, will you just check me? And so we drive to her office, my older daughter and I. It's like 9:30, and she checks me and she's like, dude, you're at a 4. She's like, do you want me to just like give you one sweep? And I'm like, yeah. And what she didn't say was like, do you want the hand of God to reach into your uterus and like wiggle things around? I was like, I'm actually starting to have contractions even on the drive there. But y'all, I had been having, this is important for the listeners, I've been having prodromal labor for like a week.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Been there. Yep.
Have you?
Same. Yeah.
Over a month for me.
Yep.
It was horrible.
Every night.
Yeah.
It would start like in the middle afternoon and I'd be like, okay, here we go.
Dinner,
things are picking up. And then I'd like eat dinner and, you know, like kind of start to like lay down and rest. And it was like, wah, wah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this Tuesday morning, I'm thinking, same thing. This is prodromal. No big deal. Whatever. We go, my friend checks me. She's like, you're at 4. I'm like, okay, well, nothing's really happening. She does that like very intense sweep. And then I drive home and we start listening to Beautiful Chorus. Do you guys know that band?
Mm-mm. Uh-uh.
Okay. This is the soundtrack of the next 14 hours. Not even 6 hours. So we get home, like I make lunch. It's kind of around 11. I called my Aunt Sarah, my doula, and I'm like, hey, just so you know, I'm like 10 minutes apart. It's fine, you know, just wanted to update you. And she's like, you know, I'm going to come up, and the worst case scenario is we'll go have lunch, grab tea, and I'll go back home. She just knows. I bet you two are like that, too. You can just kind of tell. You're like,
you get a sense.
So she comes up, and she gets here maybe around 1 o'clock. Yeah, around 1. And we're in my kitchen. And they start to have that kind of classic little bite, you know, each rush. And I'm kind of like doing that thing where you start to go like, okay, hang on.
Yep.
Brace yourself.
And they're also getting real, you know, much closer, 5 minutes, 4 minutes. And she's like, you should call Alex to come home. I'm like, I am not calling Alex. I'm not going anywhere. And she's like, maybe just shoot him a text. I'm like, I don't think so. Unbeknownst to me, she's like telling my older daughter, like in the corner, Alex, right now. Okay, my mom, who lives in Arizona, is in Lincoln with my sister Chloe, my middle sister. And also unbeknownst to me, they have instructed them to come up. Okay, so 1:15, 1:20, Alex comes home. They're still progressing. You know, I'm still feeling it. But, like, kind of this, like, party vibe happens, and my answer is, like, call Jenda, tell her where you're at, we need to get to the hospital. And I'm kind of like, are you sure? She's like, you have been praying for this for 7 to 10 business days. I'm like, get over yourself, you're having a baby right now. Alex and I get in his car, my older daughter Tallulah gets in Alex's car. We're, like, driving down Dodge, and if you're in Omaha, you'll know this, we're, like, on the expressway. Y'all, my mom has like this huge ass Range Rover, like pulls up alongside of us, like starts honking. In this caravan, three cars driving down the Dodge Expressway to get to Methodist Women.
Oh no.
And I'm telling you, it is like that party vibe. I get into the, get into my room, and you know, like I said, Methodist Women's is great, very new nurses. And so I'm like, they're like, you're in labor. I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm feeling great. Get checked in. This great nurse who I've seen in other births since is like there to like take my blood, right? She's like, do you want to sit down? I'm like, no. She's like, are you sure? Like, yeah. She goes, you're definitely the first mom I've ever met that has not sat down. And I'm like, how long have you been doing this?
Really?
I'm an Aries. I like to win. She was like, I've been taking blood for 15 years. And I'm like, and I'm your first?
That surprises me.
So Jenda gets there probably around 3:30 or 4. And she checks me and I'm at 5. And I'm like, really? Okay. And she was like, are you reading the room right now? You're in such a good mood. Everyone's happy. Like you're at 5 centimeters. So we start to walk. And, you know, just really kind of, I wouldn't call it stalled, but just kind of sitting at that 5, you know, and definitely they're getting more intense, but probably 3 minutes apart, 1 minute long. And so I asked her to break my water because my water hadn't broken yet. And so she breaks my water at probably like 4:15. And that's what I call like the train is coming into the station now. That's when I turned the corner for sure. And I think they require you to stay out of the bathtub for like 20 minutes after your water breaks or something. Oh.
Okay.
I don't know if they put the monitors back on me or something, but anyhow, I didn't get in the tub until 5. So okay. I got in the tub. I was in the tub for 20 minutes. Same sort of contractions. Opened my eyes. You know, my husband was, okay, he's an accountant, and in his birthing bag was his swim trunks
uh-huh.
and a change of clothes. because I knew, I was like, I'm going to get in the bath. Right. And so unbeknownst to me, he had changed into his swim trunks.
Oh,
I know. It was like so, so him and so wonderful. So, I do, like, he was kind of holding me and cradling me from behind, but my Aunt Sarah's eyes are just like really what I'm locked into during the rush. And then Jenda, this time, what my midwife was holding. So I was on my side in the bath. She was holding my top leg, right, to open my pelvis a little bit, especially during the rush.
Yeah.
And like, I remember going like, you know, we have such a good relationship. That's why you're able to do this. Had I not loved you so much, I probably would have denied that move.
But, yeah.
You know, it absolutely worked. And then I like open my eyes and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going through transition. Like, get out of the tub, fall to hands and knees for the next contraction, yell, I'm going to poop everywhere. Poop everywhere, all over the floor next to the bathtub. Like, remember, I'm full birth nerd. So this is like a magical transition for me.
Right. You're so happy with yourself.
This is incredible.
I make my way over to the bed. This whole pregnancy, I had had a vision of, very clear vision of delivering on all fours. So got onto the bed in all fours, pushed one time on all fours, and then Jenda was like, why don't you try squatting back? And I literally got like 45% of the way, and I was like, absolutely not. I'm like, I'm guttural, scream, primordial, like, I can't do it. There's no way. And my Aunt Sarah is like, you're doing it right now. Your baby is so close.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a total of 3 pushes. She flew out. They say that her head came out, and then she like got her shoulders and her arms out and like almost like pushed her way out of it.
Hello world, I'm here.
Dove into the world.
Her personality to a T. I think she didn't breathe right away. So Jenda like, you know, pinked her up and finally I heard her cry, and she was like, my first daughter, 7 pounds, almost even Marigold. My second daughter was like 8.5. Mm-hmm. And I always kind of wondered, like, can you tell the difference? I really couldn't. I don't know. But she came out so quick that her face was very swollen and very bruised.
Yeah.
And I remember just going like, who does she look like? Who is this child? She kind of latched, but it wasn't like my first daughter, who was just literally like a magnet. And like, you know, this was just kind of felt a little different. And Jenda looked and she was like, she has a little tongue tie, you know? And I was like, okay. And she was like, you might have the pediatrician look at it in the morning.
Yeah.
Okay. She ended up latching. We nursed that night. We nursed in the middle of the night. So I was at the hospital for a total of like 2.5 hours that time laboring.
Wow.
Yeah. We got into our recovery room. The night was beautiful. I felt amazing. I felt so good. Mm-hmm. I had like a first degree tear again. Nothing major. And you know, I'm a huge advocate of like normalizing tearing.
Mm-hmm.
Know, like, not that I think it's going to happen to everyone or it needs to, but it's like a part of birth, and it's like our bodies can heal, you know, we can get through it, and not for mamas to be so deathly afraid of it. It's like really, you know, you can heal from it. So anyhow, the next day, the pediatrician who rounded was like, yeah, she's got a little tongue tie, but, you know, I would just watch. She's nursing fine. Watch it for a couple weeks and then come back. Or go see an ENT or what have you. And then the third morning, or the, you know, like our next day, the ped that rounded was like, oh, yeah, you should just get that taken care of here because they'll include it in your hospital bill.
Yeah. Okay. change security.
Remember, he's an accountant, was like, we'll take our check, please. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. So we, the doctor who was going to clip the tie came in to consult with us, and she was like this magical goddess woman, like huge energy. I think her last name was Gold or something around Gold. It just felt like she was just so wonderful and charismatic, and was like, absolutely, this is going to be so easy. They can't even feel it. Let me take her back. Okay. So they take her back, and then she kind of like rushes back in, and she was like, we cannot do it. She has not had her vitamin K shot.
Oh no.
Okay. And I was like, well, can you give her one? And she was like, yeah, are you sure that's okay? And I'm like, absolutely. Just give her the vitamin K, you know. I think,
well, good on that doctor for even recognizing that it was an option,
right?
And speaking with you and asking.
I don't know if she was like from the island of where Superwoman is from for the day, or
yeah,
who she was, but she was magical and one of a kind, and certainly angelic, and you know, had our family's, you know, best wishes and intentions in mind. So we got the vitamin K shot, and she got her tongue tied. It took her probably a good kind of 24 hours to figure out how to nurse again after that. Or maybe nurse easily, you know, but she figured it out. She is such a voracious human and just grasped life by the reins, you know, from birth. And so she didn't really let anything, you know, stop her or hold her back. I'm a super overproducer and was with my first birth as well. So she did, I feel like, have some like reflux issues where she did like barf a lot. And, you know, even as a second time mom where you're like, oh, I got this, you kind of go like, is this normal? And thankfully we have the internet and community groups and mothers groups where you can kind of talk about it. And she gained weight like a champ, was so healthy and, you know, very, very good disposition. She just barfed a lot. So
yeah.
For other mamas listening, it's not always a sign of like something's wrong or, you know, your milk isn't right or you have to change your diet, which are all great options to look at. But this was just literally like her, you know, the peds said probably her esophagus just like wasn't as tight as others, you know? And so like after I nursed her, we would always keep her upright on our chest for like 20 minutes. So
yeah, we had our middle child was a happy spitter. After every time he nursed, he would throw up. He would never get fussy and never cry. He would just anytime he like sat up and like anytime he went over to crawl, it just come out. And it was like, okay, well, and our pediatrician said, as long as he's happy while he's doing it, it's fine.
Okay. Happy spitter.
Yes.
I forgot in Webster's dictionary that it needs to be a new attribute to you. Got it. Okay.
Absolutely. How was your recovery for your second delivery different from your first?
So, you know, my body was 11 years older, right? Mm-hmm. So, I very, very much intentionally took it a lot easier, especially with, you know, that little hiccup after my first. I also said like no visitors except my mom and like my sisters, you know, until like Saturday or something, which ended up being like 3 or 4 days after I delivered. And so I was really kind of clear around my boundaries and I didn't feel bad about it. I was just like, this is what, you know, is best for my family. And, my midwife told me this time, and maybe she did the first time, I just didn't hear her, but she said, if you take 2 weeks and do nothing, you will be back on, you know, on your feet or moving around or like, you know, healed. You need to take these 2 weeks and only care for the baby and let Alex and Tallulah, my oldest, you know, care for you. And I really, really took that to heart. I really did. And it made all the difference in the world.
Wow.
Yeah, that sounds like excellent advice for anybody who has the ability to do that. That sounds like it, that could be life-changing.
And it really was. And, you know, we'll see with, so I'm pregnant right now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm 35 weeks. So August 9th, we're in the home stretch. I am not ready. Our house is not ready. Like, we're not ready. So I'm like, I feel great. I've got so much time. I mean, like, you know, I'm even when my pelvic floor is like, mama.
Yeah, you're fine.
So we'll see, having a teenager and a toddler now,
yeah,
and then a newborn, how those 2 weeks go. But like I said, you know, either in the last pod or now, like, I'm going to be so, I've literally already told my friends, like, here's the link to the meal train app.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Figure it out.
You know, like, I'm going to, you know, look for like a cleaning service for 6 weeks. And, you know, potentially I don't know what else I will want at that time or what that will look like, but I'm not afraid to ask for it.
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. amazing. So what is something that, kind of in wrapping up with this story, what is something that you think you would like our listeners to know about your birth? And what is like the one truest, most important thing that you got out of your birth experiences that you think could help other people who are expecting?
Yes. Trust your intuition. And your intuition will really look like what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's oftentimes as women, we're like, well, what do you think I should do? Well, what do you think? And we listen to our care providers who, you know, are living their own lives and have their own stories and their own, not necessarily biases, but their own preferences, you know? And if you as a mama can listen to your intuition, listen to your gut, you will feel like you haven't betrayed yourself.
Yeah.
You'll feel like you've been honest with yourself. And this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. You have the license, you have permission to trust your gut. I spoke with a friend a few weeks ago who was just feeling kind of unsatisfied with her care provider and how much time she was getting. And I said, well, I wanted her to be her doula so bad, but we're due like 4 days from each other. And so, you know, I sent her all of my suggestions, you know, I think she trusted her gut and she knew she needed more support. And instead of just kind of going like, oh, it's fine, I'll be okay, I'm strong enough.
Yeah.
She really listened. So listener, right now, if I could tell you one thing, it would be to, you know, spend a few moments outside, put your bare feet on the ground, take a few slow, deep breaths and really ask yourself, what do you want? What is the true essence of what you want in the decision you're faced with in this moment, or for the vision of your birth, or for the way you want to feel throughout your delivery, you know, no matter if it is cesarean, epidural, unmedicated, you know, what in a field, like, what do you want? And like, trust that.
Yeah, definitely.
That's beautiful.
Oh my gosh. Mary Claire, this has been an amazing experience getting to know you and learning your birth stories. You're like a shining example of what we want for all of our people, all of our listeners, all of our supporters. Thank you again for coming back. And after you have this little nugget,
yes,
I hope you come back and share his or her story, so that we are able to kind of meet with you again and learn about this wonderful experience. So thank you so much for joining us.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Baby Weight Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about our nonprofit, the Omaha Better Birth Project, check us out online at www.omahabetterbirth.org.